Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, hey guys. How's it going? Kevin Goatees here, gutting the sacred cow. You know, this streak of having films fall in our laps that are just absolutely beloved continues. Jared Polini joins Kevin Israel and myself as he decided to try and climb Fort Eddie Murphy's walls and assail Beverly Hills Cop. Beverly Hills Cop. Wow. Well, let's see if he can do it. But before we get to it, guttingthesacredcow at gmail.com. That's where to find us. You know that if you want to advertise with us. And of course, guttingthesacredcow.com for some merch, for some good old hoopla shenanigans. And of course, the joke community room on the metaverse. You know what? Let's just jump right into it. Jared Polini going after Eddie Murphy's Beverly Hills Cop.
Gather round, here's what I know. Just that this cow has got to go. I know some people kinda like it, yeah, it's trending right now.
Yeah, that doesn't
matter, cause we're good in the sacred cow.
A hospital? What's that? It's a big building with patients, but that's unimportant right now. Kevin Israel, name that film.
Just want you to know, we're all counting,
on you. All right.
That was a softball. Thanks for giving me an easy one. after these, people just think I don't actually watch movies.
I was going to Mayday. What's that? Mayday's a big parade. It celebrates the Russian New Year. You have big balloons and a parade. I thought about doing that one. Kevin Goatee. Kevin Israel back. Here we go, kids. Gutting the sacred cow. Wowie zowie. We have had an absolute cavalcade of top-notch films selected by our guests. Batman 1989 is one of them. Back to the Future. Office Space was our live show. X-Men Days of Future Past. A ton of film. The Warriors, people were out crying for. Films that people have loved over years, but our guest has said, nay, sirs. And today is no different. As our guest today, Jared Polini, joins us to take down, wow, I would say an 80s cornerstone. Jared, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Jared, before we get in, tell the fine folks what you're up to, where we can find you.
I am mostly spending my time on Twitter, which is a terrible idea, but that's where you can find me for the most part. I spend way too much time on there, and I'm no better for it.
Jared has selected Beverly Hills Cop. Pausing for effect.
What?
Yeah. 1984, a budget of $13 million. A box office haul of $316 million. Turn that into 2022 money. $36 million budget, $877.4 million.
Imagine making $300 million off of $13 million. That's fucking insanity.
Yeah. That's why they had to make a third film, because they go, we're going to capitalize on the goodwill and make it PG-13, thus breaking my rule of sequels. Jared, my sequel theory is quite simple. One, you cannot have a sequel where the original is an R and then the sequel is a PG-13. It does not work out. Second, you cannot have the original and the sequel have more than 10 years time lapse between. Bad time.
Are there a lot of films that went R to PG-13?
more than you would care to ever hope.
Is it just
not necessarily direct sequels, but usually later in the franchise they'll sometimes switch?
No, huh. I found a lot of them do go immediately. I'd say a good chunk. I'd almost say 40% have gone R to PG-13. I will give a few examples. Police Academy is one. Then another one, let me think. Revenge of the Nerds.
I knew you were going to say that. I was wondering about that one.
Yeah. RoboCop 2 to 3. That's later, but okay. But yeah, I got to kick back and think. But there are a good amount that went from R to PG-13, and that's a.
And it's because of greed.
Yeah. Don't go for the kids. Keep it real. No. Up in the field.
What about the opposite? Is there an opposite to that? A PG-13 that went to an R?
I've never heard of it.
I don't think that exists.
Google me wrong if you dare, but I'm pretty goddamn sure that is the case.
I can't imagine. I don't even. That's like a business strategy that just wouldn't make sense. That would be like, hey, we're going to open a business in a town where there's no people that like anything that we sell. We think this is going to work. Like,
yeah. Let's open a left-handed store in a rural part of America. IMDb, as we all know, is a scale 1 through 10 with decimal points. Let's go to our guest, Jared Bellini. What do you think Beverly Hills Cop scored on the old IMDb?
I'm guessing like a 7.2 because everything on that site seems to be a 7 point something.
That's very true. Kevin Israel, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, that was a good guess. I was going to go in the low sevens. I'll up them a little. I'll go 7.8.
7.4.
Oof. It's a baby.
You two bloodhounds are hot on the trail. Kevin Israel, Rotten Tomatoes, of course, is a 1 through 100 score. What do you think the critics gave Beverly Hills Cop?
I have a feeling that I'm always wrong when I have this hunch, but I'm going to go low. I'm going to go 67.
Jared.
Oof, it's got to be higher than that. I think because of the nostalgia, people like this film. I think it's like 86, something like that.
83.
Wow. God damn.
My hunch is always wrong. Jared, what did the audience give Beverly Hills Cop?
I bet it's similar. I don't think it's going to sway too much from the critics. 87.
Kevin Israel.
I'll go 86.
82. Critics and audience, damn near simpatico.
Wow.
Quotes. Line them up.
Kev's just going to read off the whole script. So if you want to go take a pee or something.
Yeah, no.
It's funny that you're about to read off these quotes because this will get into my very first argument as to why this is a terrible movie. But go ahead.
There are a lot of them that are off the beaten path, which have stood the test of time. Nah, man, I'm from Buffalo. My all-time favorite one.
I know what this is going to be.
And my daughter says
it. Can I say it? Wait.
Can I say it? Of course you can.
This isn't my locker.
This is not my locker.
Paul Reiser.
And then the second one, this is not my office. You damn right it's not. And with the exception of Cleveland, this has the worst security in the nation. Is this the man who wrecked the buffet at the Harrow Club? I forgot about this one, and this cracked me up hard. Can you park this in a good spot? All this shit happened the last time I was here.
That's a good one. That's a good quote.
That is a good one.
tell Ramon from the club, went to the clinic and found out he is tested for herpes simplex 10. I left a lot of the obvious ones out there. I know you boys, you're just going to pick them right up. Kevin Israel, why don't you come
on? I don't think I went for obvious ones.
All right.
Disturbing the peace, I got thrown out of a window. What's the fucking charge for getting pushed out of a moving car, huh? Jaywalking? Bullshit. This is the cleanest and nicest police car I've ever been in my life. This thing's nicer than my apartment.
I was going to write that one down too, but I didn't. That was an easy one.
And, well, you do eat a lot of red meat.
Jared, how about you? Have any?
The red meat one is good, but the only one that actually makes me laugh in this entire film is very early on. It's in the very opening scene when he's talking about the cigarettes. He says, these are very popular cigarettes with the children.
Yeah.
I love that line. And honestly, that's the only one that really makes me laugh.
Wow. Five fun facts. We all know Sylvester Stallone was going to play Axel Foley up until 2 weeks before. 2 weeks before shooting, causing the production team, to rewrite on the fly in order for Eddie Murphy to step into the role. The legend is Stallone abandoned the project thanks to failed negotiations over what type of orange juice was to be kept in his trailer.
Come on.
I know. The official explanation was that Stallone's script made the budget skyrocket and Paramount did not want to spend all the extra money. I don't think I buy either of those. Back to number two, fun fact. When director Martin Brest was offered the job by Jerry Bruckheimer, he was lukewarm on the project. So he flipped a coin to decide whether or not to do it. When the film became a huge success, Brest had the quarter that he used framed.
He still had that quarter.
Call it, friendo.
I was just going to say, I smell it coming. Someone's going to make a No Country joke.
I'm your Huckleberry.
That's the is that Scrooge McDuck's like lucky quarter version for him? Lucky dime.
Yeah, it was his first dime. Work smarter, not harder.
Woohoo! Among the directors that turned down the more serious script were one, two. I'll give you a guess. Two directors. One is a fucking titan. The other one, I'll be shocked if you get his name in the near future. One's an absolute can't miss bona fide pioneer. The other, known but not that well known.
Ridley Scott.
No. Israel?
Richard Donner.
No. Martin Scorsese.
What?
Yeah. Jeez. And David Cronenberg. David Cronenberg would have made a very different film.
Oh, it's Scorsese.
I know.
Has Scorsese ever made a comedy?
No. Yeah, Irishman. That was hilarious watching him curb stomp out with Robert De Niro and an 80-year-old man trying to do it in real time. That was hilarious.
That was so uncomfortable.
Well, I guarantee there would be no nah, 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 if he did it because it'd be all Rolling Stones songs. Okay, now three guesses besides Stallone. Who else was attached to this project? I'll give you a hint. All tough guys. All very, two of them were monsters in the 70s and 80s. One was a monster in the 80s and kind of quieted down and then reemerged in the late 2000s, in the 2000s. Two were monsters in the 70s and one was a monster even in the 80s as well. A third monster in the 80s disappeared and then reemerged in the late 2000s.
Clint Eastwood.
No. We have him, Dirty Harry and Axel Foley. That's a fucking.
Well, it's a cop movie. That's where I'm going.
Yeah. Gauntlet, all that. Yep.
Yeah.
Is your venture a guess?
I got nobody.
Mickey Rourke.
I would have never gotten that.
James Caan. And Al Pacino.
I was going to say Pacino or De Niro. That would seem too ridiculous.
Yeah. It actually seemed a little bit too obvious.
Yeah. Well, anyone, throw me out of a goddamn window. Number four, the movie was the highest grossing R-rated comedy of all time until, take a guess what R-rated comedy knocked it off its perch.
Ooh.
I'll give you a hint. It's pretty recent. Last 15 years or so.
Last 15, I was going to say American Pie, but
I have no idea.
Hangover?
The Hangover it is.
Oh.
Attaboy. Nice. Number five, because of the movie's repeated production delays and his scheduled trip to Florence, Italy, Bronson Pinchot grew restless and said if they didn't start a production, he would have to drop out. He made this ultimatum despite being a virtual unknown.
I was going to say, did he have any leverage?
This is way before Balky and Perfect Strangers. And Second Sight with John Larroquette. Now.
Well, I actually have a Bronson fun fact for you that I was going to save for later, but this seems like the appropriate time for it.
It is. Please do.
So he seemed really familiar when I was watching it. I'm like, where do I know this guy from? So I IMDb'd him. And I have no idea anything else he's been in. Like, I actually don't know who he is. But among his movies on his list was something called Kung Fu and Titties.
Oh.
He plays a character called The Beaver in a movie called Kung Fu and Titties. And so being that I wanted to be prepared for this, I went ahead and watched it. It's available on Tubi. with commercials.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
The stroke your Tubi.
And it's don't watch it without hallucinogens. It's the weirdest thing ever. I didn't make it all the way through. But you will get kung fu and you will get titties.
Wait, you didn't know Perfect Strangers?
I guess I didn't make that connection. I was looking at his films. Maybe that was
okay.
it.
Okay.
Did you also not forget True Romance, where he was the acting buddy of Michael Rapaport in True Romance?
I didn't remember that.
I still need to see that movie.
God damn, you haven't seen that?
We sat down to watch it one night, and I actually think that was the night our power went out. We were set to watch it, and the power went out.
True Romance, Brain Donors. Watch those this week.
Brain Donors is the other one. When we were sitting down to watch True Romance, I was like, there's another one, and I was going to text you, but then the power went out. I was like, there's another movie Goatee always says I got to watch. Brain Donors, right?
I mean, you keep watching these shitty Netflix films that we do on our Patreon account. People are like, why does he keep watching?
Keeps
this
giving
shit?
You great shit to complain about.
Fair. Now it's time for everybody on the internet to rally around and get out those knives, spears, whatever. Here we go. And now time for Ask a Gutter. At Bango 2331. By the way, he listened to our new episode in not even 30 minutes after I released it, Kevin Israel. What a super fan. Beverly Hills Cop is a fucking gem. Jared has quite the tall task ahead of him. Mm-hmm. Not a question.
Not a question.
Lord Snurts, is there a better or more catchy soundtrack for an 80s action movie?
Hmm. Oof. Well, Top Gun.
I wouldn't call that action.
Oh, that's an action movie.
Does not action. If you really want to be, this doesn't qualify as an action film in my book. Action film would be Terminator, anything Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Van Damme, or Seagal, and Dolph Lundgren's B shit. This is not a true action film. This is more of a comedy drama, buddy cop drama. I wouldn't call this action.
We'll get into that a little bit more.
But anyway, answer the question: Is there a better? How about a better 80s soundtrack than this?
Footloose, Dirty Dancing.
Oh, you lost me with those first two, so it looks like we'd be digging out from the hole already, Kevin Israel.
The Big Chill.
I mean, The Big Chill is Forrest Gump from the 80s. All it is a collection of great songs. You go, let's sell some albums. Let's sell this record the old-fashioned way by just compiling the shit out of it. Not kind of setting any kind of original themes. Just cheating.
What about Cocktail? You got Kokomo out of that.
I wish we didn't. I'm going to throw one out there. Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Virtually all unknown artists on there, except Sig Sig Sputnik, but I think that's a fantastic one. Okay, that's not my question. It's for the gutter's question. Fuck yourself, Kevin. Next, Rat Race, Almighty Ray Race to Candace. I bet there is a chance that Beverly Hills Cop is slow enough to be boring and not hold up. It's been too long, though. Good choice for the gutting. The question, who's your favorite fictional cop? Or fictional cop, you put.
I would say Lenny Briscoe, Law and Order.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, cool. Jerry Orbach. He was a good cop. Or Bunk Moreland from The Wire.
You know, those are two answers I couldn't have fucking had 18,000 monkeys with typewriters come up with. But nonetheless, solid choices. The something something cast, STSD guys, be honest, which one of you would have this in your megalomaniac man cave? It's the artwork where Axel Foley looks in and sees the heads on rotating plates in the art gallery. Xyphos thinks it's me. He's wrong. My man cave will have old school video games, pool table, huge TV, of course, including the Spy Hunter sit down version, because I'm a gentleman. And that's pretty much the gist. Oh, of course, posters for my favorite films.
Sure.
But not the rotating heads. I'm not ostentatious like that.
I don't think anybody wants that.
No. No. How about you, Jared? Anything
from that? No, I don't need any of that stuff in my my man cave.
Noted. At Nemirovsky.
More guitars.
More guitars. Not even that. I want the most comfortable couch possible, a really good blanket, and a TV, and then I'm absolutely happy. I don't need anything else.
What are you on the run from the man out of a log cabin in the woods?
Yes, that would be wonderful. I accept.
Nemirovsky asked, what's your favorite Eddie Murphy movie? And you answered, Coming to America is the correct answer.
It's true.
Well, Coming to America was done on this very podcast about a year ago. So you might want to give that a hate listen, if you will. Next question, Ken Bjorn Turner. What wonder what Axel F did for Casio sales after Beverly Hills Cop came out? I'll answer. It sure affected a young Kevin Goatee because I had a Casio SK1, probably because of this film.
Could you play?
I can't. Yes, I did. I played the first. And I couldn't get the. But the basic part.
Show off.
Yeah. Joker is from Smash Brothers. Axel Foley in Detroit under the management of OCP and becomes the next RoboCop? Oh, yeah, boys. My mind just went there. Can you imagine that?
That was a stretch.
RoboCop and Axel Foley taking out Ed 209.
Ed 209.
Dick, you're fired. All right, that does it for Ask a Gutter. Kevin Israel, I think it's time to let Jarrett Bellini come out and try and shove a banana in the tailpipe of Beverly Hills Cop. So let's have him gut
the
sacred cow.
All right, so I think I'm just going to start by saying it's just not that funny, for starters, okay? You kind of already did iconic lines. I didn't know that you would hit them right off the bat, but really, are those what you consider iconic lines? Because to me, they're not. There's a couple lines, but they're not ones that we all remember. Are they really that good? Come on.
We'll answer in our notes.
Oh, okay. That's how this works. I just talk and then you destroy me afterward. All right.
maybe not.
Yeah. There's really not even a good iconic scene. There's like these occasional moments that stand out. I guess like the strip club scene is kind of funny, but there's really no super iconic scene. But we'll get back to that scene in a second, because the other thing is this. We don't even know what kind of film this is. It doesn't know what it wants to be. It's not an action movie, as we've already discussed. It's not some heady crime drama. It's not a James Bond, you know, thriller, even though it tries to be with all these henchmen. It's really not a good buddy cop comedy. It's trying to be all of these things. And in the process of trying to be all of them, it becomes none of them. So it doesn't even know what it wants to be. This was just a vehicle for Eddie Murphy to make his laugh that we all know and to be charming, which he is. He is charming. I will give him that. Okay, next thing. The music is trash, okay? The music is trash. Yeah. And it was like, for what it was for its time, the synth pop stuff, it was cool. I will give Axel F an okay. That being said, everything else is awful. So like the opening track, this might be more of a personal thing, but I hate 80s saxophone music. Like I can handle.
So you hate 80s music, period.
Pretty much. No, I mean, I can take cool jazz saxophone or like the big man in Springsteen saxophone. That I don't mind. But when it's like this bad 80s, so we get it on the opening track, The Heat Is On, which is a terrible song about nothing.
It's about The Heat Is On. It's on the street. That's what it's about.
Oh, is that what it's about?
You don't have to read too deep for this one.
Beside your hair, beside your feet. Come on.
It's a terrible song. He was doing weird stuff outside of the Eagles, and it's a bad song. And then beyond that, the other tracks are just sort of misguided. Okay, so we've got Axel Foley's just been concussed. His best friend was just murdered. Smash cut to him driving down the street in LA to Patti LaBelle, Stir It Up, and it's all feel good. That's a terrible decision right there. How do you go from I'm concussed, my friend is dead, good times in LA? Bad decision right there.
I guess 85 and sunny cures all forms of post-concussion syndrome.
And never mind the friend that his friend is dead. There was one other one. I think it's the car chase. In fact, this goes into the next one. It's the action sequences are terrible. They're totally hokey. The car chase, I timed it, okay? The opening car chase with the truck with all the cigarettes.
We know.
It's exactly 3 minutes, okay? That is too long for a bad car chase, okay? Basically, they took the song. It was the Neutron Dance by the Pointer Sisters, and they made a car chase to it. That is not a car chase song. The sound effects were made by like some child with a Fisher-Price microphone. Really terrible sound effects. And I really think they took the Neutron Dance. They're like, oh, this is a 3-minute radio song. Thus, our car chase must be 3 minutes. And it feels like it just goes on for no reason. Like, oh, man, the truck is still going. Oh, let's just put something in front of it to smash. Oh, more cars to smash. It's a pointless car chase. Also, I'm still trying to figure out the driver of that. I still haven't figured out who he was exactly and why he was in the truck. That part, actually, maybe I'm just missing something, but something seemed off there. I don't know why he was in the truck in the first place. The villains, okay? The villains are cartoonish, all right? Victor Maitland, works from like a very normal building, it seems, in Beverly Hills, an office park building, I guess, right? And yet he presses a button and all these goons come out dressed in suits. They take Axel out of the building and they throw him out a window to sort of like, nothing to see here, folks. Just doing, you know, cool villain stuff today here on the streets of Beverly Hills, throwing people out of windows. No big deal. And just the idea of the henchman is sort of over the top in general. I mean, it's just very too James Bond without being a James Bond movie, right? Let's see here. I got Fair. More. I'll keep going.
It's your time.
All right, good. I'll keep going here. There's a lot of points in this next part, which is that nothing makes sense. It just, none of it makes sense to begin with. So he doesn't seem to have any money, Axel, right? He's got this piece of shit car. Doesn't seem to have any money. He just pulls up to a hotel in Beverly Hills. It's fancy. And he just says, yeah, this will do. And he starts ordering room service. In reality, he would be staying in like a rat motel in Long Beach, okay? That made no sense why he was like, yeah, sure, this is cool. Even if he did get the better rate, he still wouldn't have done it. Like, that made zero sense at all. The German bearer bonds and the cocaine front didn't make sense. I get the bearer bonds was a way to bring Mikey into this and to have him killed, which they did completely nonchalantly. Like, oh, hey, we're just up in this apartment and we're just going to put two in the back of this guy's head and we're not going to run. We're not going to take off real fast. We're just going to kind of mosey. Oh, hey, go Detroit. Cool city. You know, they just did not seem to be in a rush to get out of there or worry about being seen at all. But yet when Axel and Jen are in the warehouse, they do that, that super villain. I'm going to talk to you first and tell you what I'm going to do to you, which is just horseshit. Let's see here.
It's very James Bondish as well. Yeah. When he tells you the plot of what they're going to do.
It's all that. They lie to the chief at the end, right? And the chief, like, well, we were doing this thing with Detroit PD, as though the chief wouldn't have any idea that there's this crazy involvement with another jurisdiction from another state for some big undercover thing. He's like, oh, okay, well, that must be true then. That made no sense. Also, what does any of this have to do with the Beverly Hills PD? This is drugs and bonds and customs. This is not in their jurisdiction.
That's a great
they
point.
Should give zero fucks about any of this. Okay. So this has nothing to do with Beverly Hills PD, let alone LAPD. This is for the feds to worry about. Okay.
You're a sticker for law enforcement, are you?
I kind of am. I come from a law enforcement family. So let's see here. The bad guys, they're just really bad at being bad guys. The shootout at the house. Okay. He apparently hired stormtroopers to kill people on his property. They have machine guns and they can't hit anything. And in fact, one of the shots, they're spraying them with machine gun fire. And then all of a sudden the angle of the shots comes from a different angle. Like, they should be dead. They should all be dead. Axel and all those guys, but nobody gets hit yet. What's his name? Billy, what's it? Rosewood. He from like what, 60 yards with one shot from a revolver, he takes out a guy with a machine gun, no problem. Sure. Machine guns couldn't take him out, but all of a sudden Billy's the hero here.
But that happens in how many action movies? Fucking Arnold galore, Stallone galore.
Doesn't make it right.
Par for the course. Just spring that up.
Sure. If that makes you feel good. Let's see. None of Axel's ploys would work, okay? The way he gets the hotel room, he's like flexing Rolling Stone. Like, oh, sure. You're a writer? Come on in. Let me give you the suite for no price at all. That wouldn't work. Let's see. The going into the, what's it called? The the place with all the cargo, where he goes in there and he says,
"Oh, the warehouse, the bond warehouse."
Yeah, thank you, the bond warehouse. Okay. Oh, hey, go get your supervisor. Yeah, that doesn't work. It wasn't funny. It was stupid. It didn't make any sense. Yeah, he was faking to be a customs agent or something. That's not going to happen. The country club scene, BSing his way in. Although I did like Herpes Simplex 10. That was funny. Credit where credit is due. That was still a ridiculous thing when he just like pulls up in his dumper car and nobody bats an eye. And even the valet is like, all right, cool. I guess I'll just go ahead and park this thing. Also, the transformation of Billy into some sort of loyal super cop to Axel. At the end, they're about to go in the house and he says, "I'm sorry, Sarge. I got to." No, you don't got to, Billy. You don't have to do anything. Call it in over the radio and do literally anything else. He didn't have to do anything. Mikey had it coming. He brought this on himself. He stole shit from bad men, and all these people risked a lot to help this idiot. No, they'd be like, "Oh, Mikey was an idiot. He stole some stuff and he got whacked. It happens." Let's see. And I think that's about it. I could also say that the strip club scene was really ham-fisted. Like, they're in this place, everything's cool, and then he's like, "Ooh, hey, I think this place is about to be robbed by these two guys who are also taking in the show first," which I did appreciate, before they robbed the place. They're like, "I mean, look, we're going to steal something, but before that, let's, you know, get a song or two in." But
all Phillip, of a sudden, man, is that you? You changed!
You changed, man! So, okay, so anyway, the shotgun goes off in that scene. Nobody runs. Everybody's cool. And then Taggart is sort of like, "All right, everybody, as you were, enjoy the titties." You know, like, nothing to see here. Nothing just happened. A gun did not just go off in a strip club. And again, that's actually kind of I already told you about the Kung Fu movie. So that was going to be my transition into Kung Fu and titties, by the way.
If Bronson Pichot's Serge would have jumped out in the strip bar and fought one of those motherfuckers, threw it a lemon espresso with a little twist in his face, I would have lost my shit.
I actually liked the Serge character, which is probably why they kept him in the next two. And you guys,
he was not in the second one.
He wasn't? Are you sure?
Nope.
Was he in three?
Might have been. I saw three in the theater when he came out when I was in high school, and it was trash. I don't think I've seen it. I might have seen it once. I don't remember. He definitely was not in two. Two is on cable nonstop.
I think I saw that he was at least in one more of them. Yeah. And you know they're making a fourth.
Yeah, they found a director for it, I think, yesterday I read.
It's
for Netflix.
Yeah, the director found out he was a director yesterday, too. I know nothing about what he's ever done, but good for him. And that is it. That is why Beverly Hills Cop is a bad, bad movie.
Give me a number 1 to 10.
It's a 4.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Israel, lead off.
Oh, okay. All right, so this movie does a lot of things that we've seen many times before and we've seen many times after. The plot of this movie isn't complicated. You know, a cop from a rough town's friend gets killed. He's got to go into an upscale place and throw around his, you know, gunslinging style and try to solve the murder. And that's all fine. This whole movie, and it's interesting that this movie was originally going to be starred by Sylvester Stallone. And I would love to, I wonder if that script exists on the internet somewhere.
Yes, it does. You know what it's called? Cobra. Right. I'm not even joking. Like, that's the framework was Cobra for Beverly
really?
Hills Cop. Yeah. That's why you see in Cop 2, you have the Rambo and the Cobra posters in this bedroom, Billy's bedroom.
Oh, that's really funny.
Yeah.
You're the disease. I'm the cure.
I'm the cure.
But this movie just feels like it was a vehicle for Eddie Murphy. Like, they were like, all right, just do your thing. Here's a script with, you know, a few words per page, a few directions. Just go be Eddie Murphy through this whole thing. And I got to tell you, I think we talked about this recently. I just watched Eddie Murphy Raw, and he's a fucking force of nature. Like, he is so incredibly charming and likable. And even, I mean, he was, you know, in that comedy special, he says shit that would get you canceled forever today. Like, you would never, he would do that show and then he would have to disappear from the earth forever because you could never get away with saying half of that shit. I think he starts talking about how,
you know, the F words are looking at his ass. Don't, and you got to keep moving around. Don't look at
woo,
my
woo,
ass.
Woo, woo, woo.
Yeah.
By the way, just so you guys know, I first watched that with my brother and my grandparents when we were visiting them in Florida as little kids. We thought that Eddie Murphy was such a star, and we thought, oh, we want to see this, and they had no idea, and we watched a little bit of Raw before my grandfather turned it off.
I thought you were going to say before he died.
I was going to say, I'll trade a story with you, Jarrett. My parents took my sister, 16-year-old at the time, because I told them this movie's fucking hilarious, did not know they were going to take my sister to go see American Pie.
Ooh, uncomfortable.
Very much so.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Speaking of Delirious and Raw, there's a scene where he's walking down the street in Beverly Hills when he first gets there, and these two guys walk by in complete leather outfits, dressed up like Michael Jackson, and he laughs at them. Meanwhile, that's what he wore in his two comedy specials that made him so famous.
Point though, what came out first? This
Delirious, Delirious, then this, then Raw was 87.
Was that sort of poking fun at himself a little bit there?
I'd have to think he was aware of. I think they were supposed to be dressed like Michael Jackson, but I think he had to be aware of.
It was more Michael Jackson because he just came from the hotel saying, "I'm here for Michael Jackson." Blah blah blah. You're not letting any in this hotel. It tapped in the scene before that when he mentions Michael Jackson. I gotta lean Michael Jackson. I don't think this film is super meta where it's gonna go poke back to 2 years ago, harken back to, excuse me, where he wore the blue suit on, or is it red? Red was Delirious. Blue was Raw. I think so.
Blue was Raw, red was Delirious. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I don't think the director is going to harken back. I think it was all Michael Jackson being, it was just the previous scene.
I think it was even more just look at the absurdity of people on the West Coast in California.
Right. Which still goes to my point. That's what you wore on stage. anyway, the movie does do certain things that certain things that really struck me as 80s movies, maybe even into the 90s, that they don't really do in movies anymore. They don't play radio songs during movies anymore.
No,
like all those songs that Jarrett mentioned, like during this chase, and there was a couple others, they don't do that anymore. You get maybe radio songs or a song that's going to be a radio song in the trailers of movies, but you don't get those featured songs anymore. In fact, the last movie that I can really remember that did it is Terminator 2 with You Could Be Mine.
And Roses.
Yeah,
they had a lot of other songs they were doing soundtracks. And it's a shame. I love soundtracks because you got so many different B-sides. Yep. I mean, Judgment Night. Holy shit.
Judgment Night's amazing.
The Crow, another monster one. Soundtrack. The last great soundtrack, Imho, is Tron Legacy, because it's all Daft Punk doing the instrumental score shit while Tron's doing Tron shit. But other than that,
sounds really good. I have to check that out.
It's great. I love it. But you're right. I so miss soundtracks. I couldn't even tell you. If I look at my iTunes, it's probably close to one third, maybe 25% of my entire library, which is insane.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and so you don't get that anymore.
No,
and it just shows you how the music industry's changed, and even rock and roll has changed. Like rock and roll songs used to be featured prominently in movies, and you know, and anyway, besides my old ranting that rock and roll is dead, I have to agree with Jarrett. The action in this movie is painful. It's really rough to watch, and I feel and it shows almost that Eddie Murphy came in with very little time to prepare for the movie, because at no point does he seem like he's capable of doing what he's supposed to be doing. When he flips that guy over the table, the guy comes and he flips him over the table. It looks like he was surprised that it happened. Like, he doesn't look confident in being a badass. And even when he has a gun and he's walking around, that's how I feel like I would look if I was walking around with a gun. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing with this thing. I think this is how I'm supposed to hold it. This is how I've seen other people hold it. So this is what I'm going to do. And the end gunfight is absurd. It is absolutely absurd. It feels almost like somebody made a spoof of a gunfight from the 80s, because whenever they show Eddie Murphy shooting at somebody, it never feels like he's actually shooting at the person that ends up getting hit. Like, they show him and somebody over here falls, but don't worry, we'll deal with that in post.
They got all the angles wrong at every moment.
There was, I think, a lot of editing issues. The bad guy in this, Maitland, is terrible. He's just a terrible bad guy with motivation that I don't even really get. If you're that, like,
a but guy he's so great in Rambo First Blood Part 2. Night Raven to Lone Wolf.
But you know what? And he is good at being creepy and intimidating and all of that, but it didn't work in this movie because he was an art dealer who I guess was importing stuff. It's not really clear what he was importing, maybe drugs, maybe not, like Jared said, with the bonds and everything, I don't know. But he just never felt really threatening. And then he had this muscle, like his henchman, his chief henchman, who was fucking useless. That guy, other than killing Mikey in the beginning, everything he did went wrong.
Do you know who that is, by the way? Do you both know who that is?
You know what? I felt like I should know who he was, and then I just never looked it up.
He's on the greatest show ever made in the history of television, Breaking Bad. That's Mike from Breaking Bad.
Oh, wow.
Get the hell out of here.
Yep. And also in Better Call Saul, which, as we tape this, premieres tonight, and that's the tonight, first thing I'm doing. I'm watching when we're done these podcasts.
Wait, wow. The main henchman is Mike Ehrmantraut?
Yes, it is.
With hair.
You see it's going, right? Well, you see where he is now. Yes, that's Mike from Breaking Bad.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Yeah, you know what? Now that you say it, I can see it. He was terrible. He was used. he should have been fired. As soon as he got flipped over the buffet table, I thought it would have made sense if Maitland, like, killed him or fired him or something. Like, make Maitland a bad guy. He never felt like this really threatening bad guy. And there was never, I don't know, I just never felt like there were any stakes in this. And if you're going to have an action movie like this, and this might be like the first sort of buddy cop comedy, I think. This might have been the predecessor.
I can't think of anything before this.
Yeah.
To this, like, level.
This was probably the predecessor to all of those, you know, the fucking later movies. And the chemistry between, I liked the chemistry between Eddie Murphy and why am I blanking on his name?
Bogomo.
The guy that I'm dressed up as over
Taggart.
Here. Taggart. I believed them. I believed that relationship. I didn't believe him.
Rosewood.
And I didn't know Rosewood. I don't get who he was supposed to be. Was he supposed to be this, like, young, idealistic, like, cop? Was he supposed to be this, like, I want to be an action, like I hate that I'm so by the book. I want to do more exciting action. So was that his thing?
Like, well, no. That was part two, where he becomes a full blown, like, action junkie. If you remember part two, this one,
I don't remember part two at all.
This one is the first. This one is, you hit the nail on the head. Young, idealistic cop trying to do good. And then Axel coaxes him to finally see the evidence that's being presented, and, you know, coaxes him to follow him. And obviously,
but I just never felt like, maybe it's because of how he looks, or I never felt that he looked as young or as naive as he was supposed to be. Like, I don't feel like he embodied that part. Look, all of that said,
I've seen this movie.
I love this movie.
Why?
And it's solely because of Eddie Murphy. This is a movie that proves if you have a charming enough, charismatic enough lead character, he can carry the movie. And Eddie Murphy, and that's why Eddie Murphy was the most bankable star for so many years. And even when he made so many shitty movies, Hollywood kept throwing money at him because they were like, this was a shit. Beverly Hills Cop without Eddie Murphy is a terrible movie. It's a terrible movie. It's not a good cop movie. It's not a good action movie. It's not a good mystery. There's no twist in it. There's not even a twist in it. Like, we're about to do Speed. Even Speed has a little twist in it. This doesn't have anything. This just ends with the with him, you know, the chief and Eddie shooting the guy and killing him. Like, that's it. That's how the movie ends.
But then, were there many twists in cop films previous to this? I don't think so.
But I'm just saying, there's plot-wise, everything else-wise, there's not a lot to this movie. This movie is Eddie Murphy. This whole movie is made up by Eddie Murphy. You take him out of it, you have maybe an average, maybe a subpar cop movie. But with him in it, it just shows how great of a star he was. And it almost makes you bad when you see all the other shit he ended up doing, because he fell so hard. But fuck, this was such this and 48 Hours, just such. And he's basically, it's the same character. I mean, he's the same character. It's not like
in Trading Places too.
Yeah, right.
But at the same time, did you ever legitimately like guffaw? Did you laugh out loud?
No, you know what? And I wouldn't go as far as say this is the funniest movie. This is like a hysterical movie. But it's a fucking likable movie. It just shows how Eddie, right. But this movie, to me, this movie, it might as well be just called Eddie Murphy Cop. Like, because that's what it is. You're just following Eddie Murphy around, loving everything he does. And if you watch, Eddie Murphy's in almost every scene. There's no scenes that don't have Eddie Murphy in them, because he is the movie. And that really speaks to, you know, like when I read novels, if I really like the main character and I don't like anybody else in the book, it ruins it for me, because there'll be chapters where the main character's not in the story and it drags. This movie takes that whole problem and throws it in the garbage, because I put Eddie Murphy in almost every scene. So he's just such a powerhouse in this movie that I agreed, Jared, with literally everything you said, except Eddie Murphy makes this a great movie.
Eddie Murphy makes it a watchable movie. It doesn't make it great.
We're gonna see how great it is. Give me a number.
7 to 10.
Aha.
7?
7.
Good Christ.
These right. notes brought to you by guttingthesacredcow.com. And of course, if you want to advertise with us, like you're about to hear, guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com. But of course, our buddies at Athletic Greens, boy, they can't do any wrong, can they, Kevin Israel?
No, there's
something that we can all agree on. Athletic Greens, every day like clockwork, cold glass of water, just like you do. And I chug that. No, I don't chug it. I enjoy it casually, a nice sipping drink. Mix it in there. You know why? Because I love how it helps regulate gut health. I love how it's keto, paleo, vegan, dairy, and gluten-free and contains less than 1 gram of sugar. What's your favorite thing about Athletic Greens that you tell your friends about while you're drinking something that's green? And goes, wait, what is that you're drinking? What's your favorite thing you tell them?
That it tastes good.
Yeah.
There's tons of products out there that have the vitamins and the minerals and the nutrients in them, or you can combine them, but they all taste like shit.
Yep.
Being able to take one drink in the morning kicks your day off. It tastes good. You don't have to be terrified of drinking it. The worst thing in the morning is waking up and having to drink something bad. It tastes good. It's easy. It's got everything you need in it. It's a great way to start the day.
It supports mental clarity and awareness, so that way you can start your day off right without having to shotgun a cup of coffee, which costs less than a cup of coffee. It costs less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health, more importantly than just a caffeine fix. This is a small micro habit with big benefits. It's something easy you can do every day to take great care of yourself. Now, don't forget, it also has over 7,000 5-star reviews recommended by professional athletes and leading health experts like Tim Ferriss and Michael Gervais. Of course, when you go to athleticgreens.com/GTSC, you're going to get 1 year free vitamin D and 5 free travel packs to take with you wherever you go on a trip. athleticgreens.com/GTSC, athleticgreens.com/GTSC. Notes. After the Imperial March, the Star Wars theme, Indiana Jones, and Jaws. This is the fifth most recognizable and ubiquitous movie theme out there. Axel Foley theme. People hummed this shit nonstop. People made this their ringer on their cell phone. My hand is in the air for a long time and will continue to do so. I disagree with you, Jarrett. This is a sneaky good soundtrack. I have 3 fucking songs in the soundtrack on my phone. The Neutron Dance is catchy as shit. Axel Foley, I have... probably, if I look right now, I probably have 8 or 9 remixes of the Axel Foley theme alone. I know I'm weird. I love the opening scene of the cigarette truck. That whole dialogue with the cigarette part, I love it. Yes, it does go on a little bit too long, but it's just so iconic for me. I think this film perfected the volcanic relationship between movie captains, and that loose cannon cop. Inspector Todd is the best superior officer I have seen in any cop film. I fucking love him. He is a ball buster, takes no shit. But you can see he cares. There's a difference. It's a genuine love. And like Kevin said, we're about to do Speed. The commander in Speed is a piece of shit. All he does is yell, yell, bark, bark, bark. I love Inspector Todd. He is funny as shit. And he got off in Part 3, which I hated. Part 3 is a terrible film. We'll get to that another day. No, we won't, because that film will not qualify for this podcast. Michael Tandino is very quick to whip out those bonds and show Axel. I would have waited at least 4 drinks and 2 games of pool to whip out some bonds and brag on that shit. But I guess they had to get all these key exposition points out to get the movie in under 100 minutes. So, hey, here we go. Guess what? I'm out of jail. Oh, look what I got. See what I got? I stole these. Huh? Want some? No? Okay, cool. All right. I've been drunk many a time. Very many a time. I know I've missed on a ton of verbal and physical cues from the latter sex. But one thing I know I would not miss, no matter how annihilated I have been, I would not miss 2 hitmen 3 feet from my apartment door. How the fuck did they not see those 2 guys right there? I mean, he puts his key in the lock and it's not even a half a Mississippi. Clang, that down goes Eddie Murphy and he's got Mikey pinned up against the wall. They're standing a pubic hair outside of frame. This doesn't happen.
Dun 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 dun.
You're out of cue, goddammit, please. Out of cue. Anyone else believing that a shitty Ford Nova made a trip 2/3 across this great country of ours? Me neither.
Thank you.
I'm not even the car guy, and I called that.
Yeah, I had that as a note, and I didn't. Did you? I left it out, yeah.
That thing never crossed the Michigan state line.
This looks like the same hotel as they shot Bachelor Party in, the downstairs lobby. Exterior. I'm not Googling to confirm. I'm just relying on Old Faithful, my brain. Let's do some math. $235 for a single room at the Beverly Hills Hotel is $647 in today's money. That's a pretty fair price for a hotel there. $650 a night. Some Vegas hotels are that price. I know I'm staying at one. That's even more obscene considering he got a suite for that price, by the way.
Show off.
I should tell you, I want to hang myself for paying this amount of money. I had a knockoff Michael Jackson in the Jackson jacket in the first grade with zippers, but not as cool as those. I wish I had that jacket now for someone.
Did you really?
Reason. It was all black, but not like leather shiny.
I would pay money to see that.
I would too. I totally would. I'm sure my mom has a picture somewhere. All zippers, but not like shiny, flashy leather. It was like whatever basic jacket material.
If that's not your Facebook profile picture in the next month, I'll be very disappointed.
I have to find it. I've seen many people thrown out of bars, myself included, for many times, but never have seen someone thrown out of a flimsy window of an office building. No.
It seems glass doesn't break like that.
No. You would bounce off.
Right. Hard. Yes. And if it breaks in pieces. Right. It doesn't just turn to sand.
Right.
Yeah, this that's tempered glass, so hold on now.
Yeah. This seems a bit excessive, kind of like ordering Indian food and buffalo wings on a first date. You just don't do that. Axel, you said it, Jared. Axel's very cavalier about spending money when he's on a Detroit cop salary. I wonder how this is going to pay off. I don't give a shit how many times I've seen this movie. I always laugh at the banana in the tailpipe scene. And the wink the waiter gives back and forth, that always gets me. I love when he still fucks with the custom agents. Yes, it's all horse shit. But when he just digs in, and whose porch? That your porch outside? I go, no, that's not my porch. We got nothing to worry about then. Gets me every time. We should all be so lucky to have a Surge at each of our jobs. He'd make meetings more fun with his carefree lifestyle and cutesy poo accent.
So do you remember the guy who comes in next to him who has his shirt open?
Yes, and yells at him for the shirt being open.
He was supposed to have more lines, is something I read earlier, but Surge was so good and such a likable character. They're like, screw it, you get all the lines.
I wonder what alternative universe we could be in where we can enjoy a romantic tale between Damon Wayans' gay buffet character and Surge.
I was thinking about that, like all of these semi-famous, later to be famous actors had to be gay in this movie.
Do you remember who's in Part 2, the up-and-coming comics?
I haven't seen part two. I think I've seen part two once, and I barely remember it.
Gilbert Gottfried and Chris Rock.
Oh, rest in peace. Speaking of comedians, I thought Paul Reiser was actually really good.
Yeah.
For the 90 seconds he was in it. This was a really early film for him.
I'll get to that.
Timing is good.
I'll get to that.
Uh-oh.
Victor Maitland's house. If you guys are fans of Entourage, Vinny Chase and the boys lived there for a few seasons. Did you know that? Go back and watch. I love Entourage. Well, you did too, Kevin.
I did.
Yep. That's one of their houses they lived in. I still crack up when Bill yells, "Drop it," and Taggart goes, "If you ever do that again, I'll shoot you myself."
I'll shoot you.
That's my mother's favorite line of this. It's no secret how many times on this podcast I enjoy this film, because how many quotes have I used to stump Israel successfully, I might add, on this. The characters in this film are pinnacle in the buddy cop franchise. I'll take Rosewood, Taggart, and Foley against Murtaugh and Riggs any day of the week. Mm. Lethal Weapon 1 and 2 are great. 3 and 4 trash. But I love Cop 1 and 2. The charisma, all you said that about Eddie Murphy is true. But I love the chemistry that these guys have in this film specifically. I know part two we're not going to discuss. This is Eddie Murphy's best role by far. Coming to America is highly overrated. We did in this podcast. It does not. The jokes aren't there. Now I will say this. This film I thought had more jokes than when I saw it the umpteenth number of times. Not as many jokes as I remember. But Eddie Murphy is beyond lovable. He has the comedic chops down. I think he kind of whittled away all the rough edges with 48 Hours and Trading Places. He sells himself as an undercover cop, Detroit guy. Yes, everything you said is completely true. All the nuances, all the horse shit, all that doesn't happen. I wish we got a little bit more Inspector Todd and Jeffrey, because I love those two. But the sequel, you get them in there, and I like the sequel. The soundtrack, the score, fantastic. This film is still rock solid. It aces the remote test, Jared. Of course, the remote test being at any point you catch a film, you immediately just drop the remote and go, "Oh, no, I don't do it for the next hour and a half, whatever." This is in my top 25. I absolutely still love it. 7.5 out of 10. I love this. Absolutely love it. Critics, 5-star reviews. It's a good detective story. It's got a great bad guy. I don't agree with that. It's got a motivated hero. It's a fun movie that moves and doesn't stop. Although Murphy is a one-man army comedian, the chemistry between Foley, Rosewood, and Taggart truly make the movie hilarious. A work of racial subversion that's both hilarious and cathartic. I don't think so. Not much racial aspect of that, except for the Rolling Stone Axel Foley reporter, where he screams and says, "I'm being, ousted because I'm black," of the hotel. That's it. But critics trying to work that in there. Kevin Israel guilty again when it's not there. This is my favorite one. Eddie Murphy's Axel Foley is a gay cop out to solve the murder of an ex-lover. 20 years of hindsight shows Axel Foley to be a great gay icon of 80s pop culture.
He never did try to make a move on Jen.
It's funny that you say that, Jared, because I didn't remember the movie specific enough. And for some reason, I thought they had a sex scene together. And by the end of the movie, I'd forgotten all about that.
If he's gay, why is he going to a strip club to see titties?
He was trying to fit in with the guys, with the other cops.
Well, why? He's going out there. He goes, "I'm going here. If you want to follow me, you follow me." They could have been like, "Fuck you, we're not going to follow you."
He knew
you.
They were going to go.
Why not make it awkward for them? Why not take him to a gay strip club then?
Really, I don't think Axel Foley was gay. But anyway.
I don't either. That's what I'm trying to argue.
Yeah.
Murphy exudes the kind of cheeky, cocky charm that has been missing from the screen since Cagney was a pup snarling his way out of the ghetto. What the fuck?
That's...
Who wrote this? James Cagney's great-granddaughter? Cagney. Amazon 1-star reviews. Loud, long, and vulgar. They're describing Kevin Israel's act, I say. An hour and 40? Is that too long? No, it's not.
I wish there was more hour 40 long movies.
Right?
Seriously.
Away from Murphy's iconic comic status and star quality at the time, he was a limited dramatic actor, making almost unattainable the tauter moments of the plot. It's a cop comedy, you dickhead. This is why no one should pay attention to critics ever. Begin charting the legendarily steep decline of Murphy as a conversation worth having outside the tabloids. This was the goddamn fucking pinnacle. What is this person saying? Raw, Cop 2, some can argue, but I'm not a fan. Harlem Nights. Then you can say Boomerang was the beginning of the end of Western civilization. You can argue that. Distinguished Gentleman, did not like. Vampire in Brooklyn, we all know where that went. And then, of course, we hit the Pluto Nash, Beverly Hills Cop 3 years, and him picking up a transsexual with a feet fetish.
But good or bad movies, they were still, you know, lining up the Brinks truck at his house.
Right. Oh, yeah. He was getting, you know, what, 20, 25? Was he getting 25 mil then at the time? I don't know, but he's at least getting 15, 20.
If that's a downfall of a career, I'll take it.
Whoops. Know? Oh, and then he had the chart-topping single, Was Up, Was Up, Was Up With You.
Don't Who could forget that? That?
How could you forget that? Oh, what was it? Oh, I want to party all the time.
My girl wants to party all the time.
Yep. We're all doing it right now. Expectation that Eddie Murphy's street brand of rebelliousness would devastate Stade and glittery Beverly Hills are not entirely met in a film that grows increasingly dramatic. Words, 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 words. It has a creamy surface and junky insides.
So they say about Kevin's dick.
Yeah. Or a Mars bar, which are both disgusting. Amazon 5-star reviews. As an underprivileged child, you just never see yourself hanging out in Beverly Hills or areas at age 16. Once I went to college, I toured all the film locations seen in the movie. It was a real joy to reminisce about the scenes in the movie while seeing the locations in real life. Good job, team. Way to make a movie review about yourself, you underprivileged piece of shit. Just because your parents could afford Beverly Hills like 99.9% of everybody else doesn't mean you're underprivileged, you selfish twat.
Yes.
That had to be all about him. I was underprivileged. I couldn't go see Beverly Hills. Yes, stop it. No one could afford it. That's why it's the 0.1% there.
Also, I don't even know why that's an interesting review of the movie.
Because he wanted to make it about... No. You know why I chose it. I cut and paste, so Edie Murphy, I guess Eddie's cousin, Edie Murphy is great in this movie because the fact that he is from Detroit, a once thriving city, hope it will come back to us. As Flint is my hometown, and you've heard about the water problem there, but GM pulling all their auto plants out of that city is what caused the real crash. Love Jamie Lee Curtis in this film for all the eye candy. All this is a great movie.
What?
Yeah. Did this person think Jamie Lee Curtis was Balky from Perfect Strangers? Is that the problem?
That review went a lot of places.
Yeah, that was all over the place.
If you thought that had won, my VHS tape had water damage and I had to update to DVD.
Damn it.
Good story.
Written in 2021, let's also mind you. One of Eddie Murphy's greatest movies. VHS had water. Yeah, August 21. I hope this guy gets the Best Buy real soon and gets a digital antenna and gets rid of those rabbit ears real fast. Murphy at the top of his game, an almost believable story built around the style of humor with a supporting cast that makes it work well. If you haven't seen it before, this is well worth a trip back in time. And if you have seen it before, it is well worth watching again.
Did that person really write an almost believable story?
Yes.
They still believe in Santa.
What?
He's Jewish. He's Jewish, Jarrett. Let it go.
So am I.
Bellini's Jewish.
I know. I get to sneak by because of my
one of those Italian Jews. One of those Italian Jews.
So what do they call it? Wow. Pizza bagel?
Oh, I know two of you.
Yeah.
On a side note, lots of luck trying to get the theme song out of your head. Maybe I don't want to get out of my head. All right, maybe I don't want to get out of my head. This is one of my favorite movies of all time. Had it on VHS and it broke. LOL. Amazon 1-star reviews. Great movie over 30 years old. Prime movies should get these. Prime members should get these types of movies for free.
He liked the movie, but he wanted it for free.
Very obscene. Signed, Gilbert Gottfried.
Very obscene.
We watched 15 minutes and then tossed the DVD in the trash. That didn't happen. Writers must not have had much imagination. There are other words in the English language than curse words. This movie had the excessive use of the F word. I know it was rated R and expected some rough language, but this was way over the top. No, Over the Top was a 1987 film with Stallone about arm wrestling and truck driving.
You know what? I don't even think that there was that much cursing in it, was there? By some today's standards?
So we're from Jersey. This doesn't affect us because we're so used to it. It doesn't stand out. But these are the same people who, if someone says "God damn" in a movie, they write in the Amazon review, "How dare they take the Lord's name in vain?" So one "God damn" will send people off the, you know. The same type of people who put an Easter bunny in a noose outside of a Waffle House in Atlanta. Yes, that happened. I saw it with my own eyes.
Oh, you guys saw what I did?
Next one. To be fair, I only watched about the first 10 minutes. There was way too much cursing, which detracted from the movie, and I did not continue to watch it. I like the actor. I watched many fun, decent movies with him, but this one, I had to turn it off after the first few minutes. Every character uses the four-letter word in almost in every sentence. Movies should be entertaining and educational. This one is neither. I'm so sad to see Eddie Murphy produce and promote something like this. I will never watch his movies again. I wonder if this reviewer learned about vampires from Vampires in Brooklyn, and I think they learned about commodities from Trading Places. Oh, and of course, learning to whip that pussy and not be pussy whipped from Boomerang.
It's no dinner with my dinner with Andre.
Missed this huge 80s hit until now. It's terrible. Except for Eddie Murphy's laugh, which, why was this movie a phenomenon because of that? I don't get it. Features the usual Keystone Cops take, but this time it's the Beverly Hills police force made to look like they wouldn't know crime if it hit them over the head. Yeah, it's Beverly Hills. No crime goes on there, you idiots. Unless it's white collar crime or people stealing. I guess it does. Completely unrealistic until the end, right when the chief doesn't believe the ultra violent shootout that just happened was called for. I laughed twice. When one of the villains gets thrown to the salad bar, and when Eddie Murphy stuffs three bananas into a squad car's tailpipe. The rest, sterile. At best. Kevin Israel, did Jared Bellini gut the sacred cow?
Jared, thank you so much for coming on the show. You are awesome. And I agreed with 99.9% of what you said, which is so weird because I don't think you did gut it. Mm. You got so close. You made a lot of awesome points that I do agree with, but I just think Eddie Murphy's just a fucking juggernaut. And this was him at his best.
Zenith. That's a pretty high bar. You did a great job. I agree with all your points, but you didn't do it.
You know what? There have been girls that I wanted to go out with that were like, "Listen, I like you. I think you're cute. You're funny, but I'm just not going to go out with you." You don't be like, "Why?" So I'm sorry to make you feel like that.
Yeah, we could be friends, right? Hey, is your friend Mark single? Well, that one always hurt, right? Jared, tell the folks what you're up to again, where we can find you, what you're working on.
You can just find me. Like I said, I'm Guy on Twitter. I'm at Jared Bellini, and I do a lot of photography on the side, and that's what keeps me busy.
Has anyone told you could get a much skinnier version of Brian Posehn?
No, but I have heard Louis C.K. in the past.
Oh, I don't see a plan. I don't see a plan. Oh, it's Harvey Weinstein. Never mind. Yeah, I think I read at Female Comics.
We don't know if he has his pants on, so.
Yeah. Oh, he's got the plan. That's hilarious. Awesome. Kevin Israel, what's up with you, pal?
Check me out at kevinisrael.com for upcoming comedy dates. I got a pretty busy calendar, April and May, and June is filling up nicely. Also, check out my album, The Struggle is Real, on iTunes and everywhere you get stuff. And make sure to leave us a 5-star rating and a quick sentence review, a few sentence review on your podcast platform of choice. Kevin Goatee does you the honor of recognizing the best reviews we get, and we love them and we like to feature them on Twitter. So if you leave us something extra special nice, we'll do something extra special nice for you. That's a win-win.
KevinGoatee.com for shenanigans, guttingthesacredcow.com, and of course, guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com if you want to reach out just to say hi, how are you? And of course, as well as advertise with us, make sure you go over, of course, to athleticgreens.com/GTSC. Find us on the metaverse. That's right, the joke community room. When you're not too busy jerking off with a virtual reality helmet on, you can go and watch our show there. So check that out. Check us out there. Subscribe to us on YouTube. That doesn't hurt. So tell your friends, for Christ's sakes. Tell your friends how funny this is and the show, how much you love it. We know you do. Just share the word. Jared Bellini, you're a joy. You're a treat. Thank you for coming on our fine little vehicle. We'll see all you folks later. Take care.
Thanks, guys. This was fun.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.